B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
You know, it's so funny when we were building our house in Nashville. One of the workers came into the room and he said, "Well, you wrote that Aerosmith song, Do a Naked Lady."
That and much more coming up today with legendary songwriter and producer Desmond Child as he checked in with us a day after his 66th birthday. Of course, he worked with Aerosmith. He worked with Kiss. We asked him about bridging the pop sensibilities with rock, as well as taking care of his mother, who wanted to write his songs when she was younger.
And she always said, "Well, we're going to have a hit someday, and we're going to live on Miami Beach in a mansion." And, you know, I made that come true for her.
He told me all about how he wrote the Kiss song, "I Was Made for Loving You." We talked about keys to his success.
You know, it's like I had things that, in the end, enriched me.
And more coming up with Desmond Child. Plus, I'm joined by Chase Engel of the band Chase Engel and the Night Shift. After Al Beck and Rock News, it's a lot to get to today. Talkin' Rock with Meltdown starts now.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. If this is your first time, go back and check out some of the past ones. Wayne and Bobby from Saliva were just on. John 5 was on last week. We've had Tom Kiefer on recently. Vinny Appice as well. Tommy Vext from the band Bad Wolves. I mean, just tons of great conversations with some of these guys. And we do appreciate you listening. Hey, if you like this podcast, 5-star ratings, reviews, always appreciated on Apple and iTunes and the whole thing. We'll talk with Al Beck coming up here in a few minutes with Rock News, as we got news on Dave Mustaine, Ozzy's future, as well as a piece of rock memorabilia that sold for over $300,000. A band getting back together, as well as a fire started in the studio of a band that just put out a record. So we'll tell you about that story coming up here in just a bit. And then Chase Engel and the Night Shift. That's a band out of Saginaw, Michigan, kind of the Bay City, Saginaw, Midland area. And they're kind of working right now with Brian Wheat from Tesla. And they got this really great sound. It's a classic sounding sound, but their stage performance is really what kind of attracted me to them. So we'll talk with Chase coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, it's a true legend in this business, Desmond Child. I mean, just Google him. The hit songs he's written, I mean, this guy, he could probably just print money if he wanted to. But a really great conversation with Desmond, who just turned 66 yesterday. So that's how we start the conversation off, with a birthday greeting for Desmond Child today on Talkin' Rock.
Oh, thank you. I'm officially on Route 66.
Is that right?
Yeah, I just turned 66.
Nice. Well, congratulations, man. That's awesome. Hey, what's easier, making this record or answering questions about yourself for a month? What's easier?
Answering questions about myself. I never tire about talking about myself.
You've been answering questions all morning long. What kind of things are people asking you?
Well, they're asking me about my book that's coming out in the spring, called Living on Prayer, Big Songs, Big Life with David Ritz. And that's I've spent the last 3.5 years writing, you know, very intense cinematic book about my journey in life. And, of course, I have my album, Desmond Child Live, which was recorded in a little club in New York City called Feinstein's 54 Below. I brought together all of my favorite musicians and singers to help me with it. And, I'm producing a movie called Transcon, The Making of Lou Pearlman and the Boy Band Revolution, and a Broadway show in the works called Cuba Libre, which is the true story of my family before and after the Cuban Revolution. So I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like you're a little bit busier than I am, that's for sure. So you just touched on a few things right there. You talked about the boy band and thing, boy bands and whatnot. Talk about bridging the pop sensibilities with the rock artists that you're so good at doing.
Well, you know, I think my mother was a Cuban songwriter, Elena Casal, so I didn't know that people didn't write songs. So as soon as I was old enough to get up on the piano bench, I started writing my little compositions and concertos and things like that. So that melodic sense, and also Latin music is very melodic. So I think, and rhythmic. So I think that's always in everything that I do. And so when I was co-writing with John and Richie, we were writing You Give Love a Bad Name. And, you know, there's like that pulsing, you know, dun, 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 you know, all that. That had kind of like a street feel to it. And, you know, that comes from my background growing up in the projects in Miami and being Latino and all of that.
Now, one of the big things I've always found amazing with your career was when I was like getting into radio, actually just before I got into radio in the late 80s and stuff, you practically single-handedly revised Aerosmith's career. Talk about that.
Well, Aerosmith had kind of come back together and made a record called Done With Mirrors. And their A&R guy, John Klaudner, had seen the success that I had with Kiss and Bon Jovi and kind of pushed me onto the Aerosmith. They had never written with an outside writer. And so I flew to Boston. I went to this warehouse where they were rehearsing and, you know, coming up with stuff. And the very first song we wrote was Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Did John Klaudner have anything to do with that or no?
Well, he wore the dress in the video.
That's right, right.
I think he enjoyed that. Maybe a little too much.
But yeah, but I mean, that was 30 years ago. And I think because of Permanent Vacation and Pump and stuff, I mean, that's really what gave Aerosmith a rebirth.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, that song in particular picked people's spirits up and put a smile on people's face. And, you know, it's so funny when we were building our house in Nashville. One of the workers came into, you know, the room and he said, "Well, you wrote that Aerosmith song, Do a Naked Lady." He actually thought it was Do a Naked Lady because that's what he wanted to hear.
Right. Well, there you go. There's your next song for Aerosmith. There you go. So you just mentioned Kiss and stuff. And of course you were instrumental in writing I Was Made for Loving You. And I'm not like, I'm a Kiss fan. Okay. But I'm not like a Kiss diehard, but for Kiss diehards, that song is so divisive. Talk a little bit about that song.
Well, you know, at the time I was performing with my group Desmond Child and Rouge, and my vision was to kind of, I've always done this, is kind of forge styles together. So at that time, disco was very big, but also the invention of drum machines. So I had a little like first drum machine ever, you know, just doing that four on the floor. And I was trying to write songs to a beat. And so when I went to write with Paul, because he was a fan of the group and said, "Hey, let's try writing a song." You know, I started saying, "Hey, how about we put Kiss guitars on a dance beat?" And that became, you know, I Was Made for Loving You.
Yeah. And you've probably heard over the years, it's like the Kiss fans, they either love it or they hate it, right?
Well, you know, they were used to a certain kind of thing, but you know, to this day, you know, that song I Was Made for Loving You is like it's their biggest international hit. And so, you know, Gene's never taken to the song, but you know, I don't know if you saw that movie Why Him, that, you know, that song's all over that movie, and they actually appear in the movie, and it's like, well, Gene showed up, you know, so you know, he must not dislike it that much.
You know, I don't dislike the song, and I think it's pretty good. I like Dynasty too, and some Kiss fans aren't crazy about the Dynasty record, but I mean, we could sit here and talk about Kiss all day long. But hey, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, as a child, could you envision, you know, I mean, what you would have accomplished? I mean, this coming Friday, I will have been at the Riff here in Detroit for 24 years. That's like mind-blowing to me, but I mean, the success you've had is crazy.
Well, my mother was the Cuban songwriter Elena Casals. I mean, she struggled her whole life to get songs cut and all of this kind of stuff. So I didn't know any other way. And she always said, "Well, we're going to have a hit someday, and we're going to live on Miami Beach in a mansion." And, you know, I made that come true for her. And so that, I have a lot of pride in that.
That is that's really great. Yeah. So what do you think of the music scene out there right now as far as rock, pop, whatever?
You know, I just love music. You know, I mean, I'm just in love with Halsey. Like, I'm just crazy about Halsey. And so, you know, I think people are making really interesting music, you know, and, you know, I just love all kinds of music, and I can get into it. A couple of years ago, I had a number one record with Zedd called Beautiful Now. So that was, you know, what they call EDM, electronic dance music.
Right.
But, you know, I've had, you know, hits with, you know, Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood in country. So I'm what I call myself genre fluid.
And of course, right here in Detroit, it's kind of like the some would say, you know, maybe EDM was maybe even born here. They'd have that big festival every year in Hart Plaza on Memorial Weekend. Hey, speaking of Detroit and stuff, does Detroit play into any of your musical sensibilities from some of the past artists that have come out of here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Motown is in my bones. I mean, when I was living in the projects of Miami, I mean, we'd all play on the swing sets, and there'd be somebody with the, you know, the R&B station, you know, playing, you know, Aretha Franklin and, you know, the Motown hits and Diana Ross and, you know, all of it, the Temptations. And that was just as strong an influence as the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Bob Dylan and all of that in my system.
Wow. So final thing here for you, because I know you got a bunch of interviews still to go here. Desmond Child Live is the new record. But final thing, what would you consider like is the key to your success? And you've had tons of it. What is it?
Well, you know, growing up, you know, my mom was Cuban. I grew up in the Cuban exile community. My family, I was born here, but, you know, my whole family, you know, had to move here seeking freedom. And, you know, being poor, also being gay, you know, it's like I had things that in the end enriched me in ways that I couldn't imagine. When I was growing up, I thought I was cursed with those things. But in the end, looking back, you know, so I've had a very interesting life. My book, it's called Living on a Prayer, Big Songs, Big Life with David Ritz, coming out in the spring, where I tell, you know, a very cinematic story about, you know, rags to riches, the American dream, and how lucky I am to have grown up in the times that I did, and to still be living today and still creating and going, looking forward.
Well, maybe we can talk to you again in the spring when the record comes out. But Desmond, truly an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, and a privilege. And congratulations on your success, and Desmond Child Live and the whole thing. And thanks so much for the time.
Well, thank you so much. Follow me on Instagram at DesmondChild.Child. Desmond.Child.
I'll check it out. Thanks, Desmond. Appreciate it.
Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And there you have it. Legendary.
That's right.
Desmond.
Legendary. Enter
me. L back. There he is. Not so legendary.
Oh, but, we weren't talking about me.
Yeah, okay. No, not at all. Okay. Not even close. Desmond Child there today on the Talking Rock and Meltdown podcast. Are you familiar with his work?
No. I don't even know the name.
No? Really?
No.
Come on, man. He like wrote all sorts of great songs. I Was Made for Loving You. Dude Looks Like a Lady. I mean, tons of Bon Jovi hits.
Oh, no kidding.
I mean, really, just I
know all the songs.
Yeah, like I said, this guy just has like a license to print money. I mean, really, that's
awesome.
What he has. So yeah, Google him one time if you get a chance. I'm not talking to you because you don't know how the Google machine works.
No.
But
I'm still asking Jeeves a bunch of stuff.
Ask Jeeves. I forgot about that. Wow, what is that, 2007?
Who knows? Oh, it's old.
Ask Jeeves.
Really old.
Look at that. Next, you're going to say, get off my lawn.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. They do say that you are kind of an old spirit.
Yeah. Can we wrap this up so we can go home and watch Bob Newhart?
That's right. Mary Hartman.
Yep.
God, awful show.
Oh, you know, come on.
Bob Newhart, I didn't really like, but what was the other show he was on? The Bob Newhart Show.
Yeah, the Bob Newhart Show. And
that was
Newhart.
With Larry and his brother Daryl and his other brother Daryl, right? That was that show.
That might have been Newhart. Newhart was...
Just Newhart. Yeah, there you go.
Bob Newhart, he was the psychologist.
This is taking a turn for the worse, and we have to get it back on track.
Do we have to? I'm finally in my comfort zone.
Right, exactly. Well, let's talk about Megadeth here real fast. I see that Dave Mustaine, by the way, is selling nearly 150 pieces of music gear on Reverb, which is really cool, man. It's like, can you imagine being a kid and being able to buy, like, you know, stuff that your musical idols had used?
Yeah,
like old microphones or anything. I mean, we'll talk about some rock and roll memorabilia.
I was gonna say I would have wanted to buy something Nirvana,
right?
And so that's you know, we got a story about that coming up a little bit later on in the news.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So
I don't think I could have afforded it though.
Right,
when
exactly.
I was 12.
Well, there may be there may be a lot of things on Dave's list you can't afford.
Fair.
All sorts of amps.
God, I would love one of those Dean guitars though.
A 7-piece D drum kit. With the cover art from Peace Sells on the kick drum. Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, several acoustic guitars, multiple effects pedals, kick pedals, cymbals, and more. I guess a lot of guys have done this. Green Day, Mastodons, Brett Hinds, and Avenged Sevenfold have partnered with Reverb in the past, it says, according to this story. So pretty cool. But anyways, as far as Dave's health is concerned, David Ellison spoke up about it. So what do you
have
to say?
Yeah, David Ellison was talking in an interview recently and kind of gave a little update on the status of the throat cancer that Dave Mustaine has been battling. Says that he's completed his treatments. He is still obviously recovering. There's still a little bit of, you know, there's some road ahead, but looks like he's doing well and hoping to get him back and healthy and back on that new album.
Yeah. Yeah, the new record. Yeah, that's right, because they just did that cruise, and I was talking with John 5 about this last week, and I was going to ask John 5, how's Dave doing? But then I realized that John 5 never left the dock, because he gets seasick,
right.
And he doesn't go on the cruise. He just plays on the kickoff, the send-off.
Yeah. So. It's still cool that he's involved. He goes down
great.
There and does the kickoff thing.
Yeah, John's such a nice guy, and everybody loves John so much. So we'll wish the best for Dave. I really like Dave, and I've gotten to know him a little bit over the years, and He's a good guy. So.
Yeah, he's always been good to me.
Yeah,
he's
right.
been really good to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the past. So anyways, other news, Ozzy talking about a 2020 release for a new record.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, we're just kind of a quick update. We were just talking. You mentioned John 5 earlier. I think on that episode, you and I were discussing Ozzy's new album, which does not include Zakk Wylde, which kind of surprised all of us.
Yeah, but do you know who's going to play on it?
I don't know. He was just kind of jamming with some friends is what he told Zakk. Because I think he hooked up with that producer from Post Malone, did that song with Post Malone, hooked up with that producer, started jamming with some guys, next thing he knows, he's got a record.
Yeah,
some people end up with babies that way. But with just a quick update on that story, it does look like that new album's coming out January of next year, so just a couple of months away.
Yeah, so he's got this best of, or this greatest hits or whatever coming out, and if you dress up like Ozzy and you submit it, you can check that out online anywhere, and you submit it, I guess they're drawing 10 names, and they're going to get you the autographed copy of this, which I guess comes with a bone of some sort, and Ozzy autographs the bone.
Of course. Of course.
You know.
That's a cool idea. He's encouraging Ozzy impersonators. That's cool.
I told you. It's like I dressed up as Ozzy every year. I was telling John 5 about this last week from the Diary of a Madman when he had the blood coming down his face and the white face and all this stuff, you know. So, so I dressed up as Ozzy every year because I was that original.
Exactly.
So, speaking of rock and roll memorabilia, we were just talking about it. So what do you got?
All right. So we had heard about the Kurt Cobain, that cardigan, you know, from Unplugged in New York, the MTV session. Well, that was up for auction. We had mentioned that in the news. Well, the auction was this past Friday. We finally got a price. It was right around where they were expecting it. It ended up selling for $334,000.
Wow, man. Yeah, they said that it was going to go for around $300,000. We were talking about this off the air, you and I were. That, really, it's a pretty recognizable piece of rock and roll memorabilia. I mean,
it really is.
And it almost, to a certain degree, represents a complete genre, so to speak, of that music.
It does. And, you know, because you think about it, like clothing and grunge and all that, you like you think of flannel, but any flannel or that cardigan.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of anything that's as representative of that whole movement in music as that that cardigan. I mean, really. And so, yeah, you were saying earlier you were surprised it sold for that much. I mean, that's a pretty big piece of rock, you know? So that's,
it
that's
is,
really cool.
Yeah. I just wouldn't, even though it was Kurt Cobain's, and I love Kurt Cobain, that's a lot of money for a piece of clothing.
It's a lot, but it's, you know,
stained and, you know, cigarette burns on it.
That's it, man. Yeah. That's history.
I can wrap my head around that one more, though, than that paper plate that had pizza grease on one side and a set list on the other. Yeah. I don't remember what that sold for, but it was that was way too much.
It wasn't $300,000, that's for sure.
No.
So switching gears, Steve Gorman was on the podcast about 2 weeks ago, and I loved talking to him. He was in the Black Crowes, and he's got this book out called The Life and Death of the Black Crowes. It's called Hard to Handle, The Life and Death of the Black Crowes. You always got to have that subtitle now, which is, like, I think part of the law.
Yeah, I think so.
In
it
the
might
literary
be.
Content.
Yeah.
In the literary
all
world.
All the other titles are taken.
Right. So you got to have a subtitle.
Yeah, like Talking Rock with Meltdown.
That's right. Well, no, it would be Talking Rock with Meltdown featuring Alback. That would be there.
Yeah.
So anyways, but he was a great interview, and I'd never met him or talked to him before, but what I liked about him was he was just... He wasn't afraid to talk. He was very candid. He talked about the Black Crowes. He talked about how, you know, the Robinson brothers are going to have to, you know, get back together, not because they want to, but by necessity.
Yeah.
And so what are you hearing?
Well, like you were kind of saying, Steve Gorman does not pull any punches. So you kind of believe the things that he does say to you. But now there's been a little thing. Now, nothing's been confirmed. Now, that was a rumor that, you know, we kind of got going on here on this podcast. But the Black Crowes went and changed the profile picture for their Facebook page. So that's, of course, got the rumor mill swirling, people kind of saying, like, maybe they are going to reunite.
Well, he said something interesting that, you know, he was writing his book and stuff. And so I said, have the guys said anything to you about the book? And one of the most interesting things he said, no, they haven't said nothing to me about it. But what they did, you know, but they can't. He says that they can't believe he'd have the audacity to put a narrative out there about the Black Crowes. So, you know, that gives you a little bit of a hint as to how he talked about the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
And no, especially the brothers.
I've heard a few stories since he's been promoting this book. And yeah, it's pretty dysfunctional.
Yeah. So anyways, final thing here, because quite frankly, I don't want to talk to you much more. And Chase Engel.
You're reading
and
my mind.
The Night Shift.
Reading my mind.
Chase is online here, and we're going to talk to him here in just a second. But yeah, the guys from Tool, I guess they had a little, they were rocking so hard, they almost started a fire.
Yeah,
right?
It was a hot set, I'll tell you. Oh, boy.
Hey.
That's right. Fear Inoculum is available now. Great album. Good stuff from Tool. But here's the thing. I guess they almost set the studio on fire while they were recording it. The story is Danny Carey's got this, like, thing behind him, this geometric shape or whatever, and it's got little things hanging out, including candles. Mm. And as he was playing drums on one of the tracks, somehow one of the candles knocked over, fell onto his floor tom. The floor tom caught on fire. Now, of course, the drum tech is in the control room, sees it, rushes in. They get the fire out. The only thing that actually caught on fire was the floor tom, so no one was hurt. The studio is intact. But, yeah, they set fire to the studio while they were recording Fear Inoculum.
Well, you know, it was about 3 minutes into the song, so they had to wait another 10 minutes for the song to end before they could actually go in there. So, so what do you got as far as socials? Let's go.
Alback Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown, WRIF, WRIF Meltdown at Instagram. Hey, Chase Engel and the Night Shift. We've got Chase on the phone with us. Hey, Chase, how's things, man?
Great. How are things with you, Mr. Meltdown?
Everything is good. Chase Engel and the Night Shift. So tell me a little bit about your band. I saw some live video, and I've got my thoughts. But you tell me about your band and what people should know about Chase Engel and the Night Shift.
We're trying to change the game up. You know, I think rock is, I mean, I love rock and roll music, but it's gotten stale. And we're kind of getting the beat down from pop and rap and stuff over the past 20 or so years. I mean, rock's still alive to a certain extent, but we're trying to bring that. I'm a huge fan of, like, Van Halen, and I really think they had that fun, dancey-type rock and roll, and we're trying to bring that back to the live show, just something that's a bit different, trying to change the game up a little bit in any way that we can.
Yeah, it is. It's fun because I was watching your video. There's like this hour-long video that I saw online, and you guys like are all kind of choreographed on the stage. You're all wearing the same thing, and it reminded me, it's definitely 70s type of fun party rock. Am I wrong somewhere or no?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I grew up listening to classic rock. That's what my parents like. That's what I like. So heavily influenced by 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s rock. We don't, a lot of people are like, well, what are your influences? We really don't try to sound like anybody. So we actually have this natural 70s, 80s type vibe. No, I totally get it. We're going for like this Aerosmith type thing. I don't know. It just kind of works itself out, I guess.
So how long have you guys been together?
Quite a while. Me and the drummer have been together almost 10 years.
Wow.
The bass player, like, yeah. Like, even though I'm 27, but me and him been together almost 10 years. The bass player almost 8 years. And then we got two other guitar players that are fairly newer. They're younger guys. I don't even know if they're 21 yet. So they're fairly young. So they're fairly fresh to the band. A couple years, maybe, but...
Now,
we've been together a while.
Now, I was going to say, so you spent some time in Nashville, too. Now, what were you doing in Nashville, and what brought you back to Michigan?
Well, I went to college down there. So I went to college for music production and engineering, and I remember I went into the first class the first week, and they had some people come in that were recording on the other side of the wall there. And it was my first week there in class. And I remember looking at somebody else. It was a singer. It was a girl singer. Okay, yeah, you go ahead. And I remember thinking, this is not what I want to do. I want to be on the other side. I want to be the recording engineer. I do not want to be the recording engineer. I want to be the recording artist.
Right.
And I completed it. Lived in Nashville for about a year. And then came back and figured, well, you know, I didn't care for Nashville that much. Music City, but I didn't care for it that much. Came back to Saginaw and formed the band, and hopefully the rest is history. See what happens.
Yeah, you're a Midwestern guy. There's no question. So let me ask you this. So who makes your band's outfits? That's a very important question.
No, well, a lot like Amazon. Like, they're very cheap outfits.
All right.
We get them all from China, and the problem is they're like mismatched. We got to order a bunch of them, so sometimes the pants will be like super, super long, and my mom's got to tailor them in, but yeah, they are not fancy suits by any means. But it's good, because we're sweaty, and I rip them a lot of times.
Now, obviously, you guys have to rehearse and stuff. So, I mean, but you guys kind of do like a show with the show. And so, where do you guys find time to do all that stuff?
Extensively. We practice probably more than any other band, and we really have to. A lot of times, it'll be a 5-day-a-week thing. And the thing with us is, too, you mentioned the show, it's a whole other animal. And it takes so much time just to put that stuff together. And to do that and to play at the same time is very difficult. It really is. It's not just jumping around. I mean, there's a lot that happens during our show, and we have to I'll clear the front room out, basically. I think my parents get tired of it, but they got a big front room. We'll clean all the couches, coffee tables, everything. We got to move everything out of there. I got to ship them all out, make them go down to their room. And before we do a video like that, we'll practice 3 or 4 days a week, nothing but performance type stuff. So it's kind of backwards for a band. Everybody thinks, oh, you just playing guitar and rehearsing songs. For us, it's a lot more than that. But
now, of course, being here in Michigan, now you're in Saginaw. Is that where you guys are based out of?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we're from the Tri-Cities up here. So we got Saginaw, Midland, Bay City. We're all from this general area. But yeah, Saginaw is our hub for sure.
All right. So what kind of Michigan bands have influenced you guys?
Well, our manager is the bass player from Tesla. I don't know if you knew that. Brian Wheat from Tesla.
Right.
And one of the first times that this is even before we had our guitar player who also plays saxophone. We didn't even have that. One of the first things he said, he's like, man, I really get this Bob Seger type vibe from you guys. Like you said, the 70s type fun rock and roll, that Hollywood night type, and I love Bob Seger. So I would have to say, even though I love Bob Seger, I tend to gravitate more towards Kid Rock just because he really plays by no rules. He'll do anything. He'll do a rap song, a country song, a pop song, whatever. He mashes songs together, and when I seen Kid Rock when I was probably, my dad took me to see him when I was like 9 years old. We really didn't know anything about him. We had no idea what he was doing on stage with the ladies and the whole bit. We had no idea. And he took me to see him. And I remember he came out. My dad's going, oh, man, this was a big mistake. Because he had the dancers and stuff on stage. This was a big mistake. But I remember seeing him and thinking, man, this guy just, the things that he did, the covers and the mashups and the stage show that he had, I absolutely loved it. And I don't pattern myself. I don't pattern the band after him. But definitely a big influence show-wise would be Kid Rock. And I would say musically, maybe a bit more Bob Seger. But we are very heavily Michigan influenced.
Yeah. How do you hook up with a guy like Brian?
He wound up seeing a video of ours. He was running a competition, this thing where him and an associate of his were going to bring a band in. It was a worldwide competition. He had bands from all over. They were going to bring a band in, film it while he was recording them, and they were going to pitch it to a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted live videos. We wound up breaking all the rules, so we wound up just sending them a music video. I didn't think anything was going to come from it. You know, as a band, you send out a million different emails like that. And they called us back right away and said, hey, what you guys got going on here with the dancing and the suits and the rock, Brian loves it. He loves that real. He's a guy that likes, he wants to find the next, you know, that next cutting edge, the next Guns N' Roses or Nirvana. He wants, and I'm not saying we are them, but we're trying to change the game. And he wants to find that next band that is really going to change the game. And he's hoping that it's us. So yeah, we sent him a video and he really liked it. And then about 6 months later, there we were in his studio in Sacramento, California, with all his gold Tesla records on the wall, and we are still working with him to this day. So,
yeah, that's cool. Well, I'll tell you what, man. Good luck. December 27th, right? That's the Buck Cherry show. It's your opening up at Diesel? Yeah. Yeah.
We will be with Buck Cherry there at the Diesel. I mean, we've looked up to Buck Cherry forever. It's amazing to get a chance to play with a band like that. So, yeah. Jay Singleman, Night Shift. I know it's a mouthful, but look it up if you can. If Bruce Springsteen can get away with it, I can get away with Jay Single, Night Shift.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, so December 27th at the Diesel. Mr. Meltdown, thank you so much for having us. It has been a pleasure.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.